Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
It's Friday, the 22nd of April. Good morning and welcome to Africa Link, coming to you from our studios in Bonn, Germany. I am Jane Ayeko-Kumet. Coming up in this edition, after hundreds drawn on their way across the Mediterranean Sea to Europe, we ask if the flow of migrants from Africa will ever cease.
The situation in Libya certainly needs to be resolved, because what's happening now is that these human smugglers can operate with impunity because there's no real security system there to ensure that these kind of vessels are launched off the Libyan coast.
Kenyan Muslims accuse the police of extrajudicial killings.
While these violations had significantly gone down last year, an emerging trend indicates a return of enforced disappearances and extrajudicial killings.
And we shall also be hearing about the fate of young Ghanaian boys trafficked and forced into marriage. Stay tuned.
Top story.
For our top story today, we shall be talking about the fate of migrants who drowned in the Mediterranean Sea trying to make their way to Europe. The Office of the UN High Commission for Refugees, UNHCR, said on Wednesday that as many as 500 people may have lost their life when a ship capsized in the Mediterranean Sea. The incident occurred on 16th of April. According to the International Organization for Migration, close to 180,000 people have entered Europe by sea this year. I've been speaking to Itai Viviriri, a communications officer at IOM, and I started by asking him what exactly we know about the victims and where they come from.
We're mostly from Somalia. But obviously what we are still waiting for is official confirmation from the relevant authorities, say from Libya, and also confirmation hopefully from the authorities in Greece, where the survivors were brought to several days after the incident.
Is this attempt at crossing the Mediterranean Sea directly related to the tighter border controls between Greece and the rest of other European countries?
We certainly are not making that connection yet, because as you know, there's always been this kind of migration from North Africa, mostly West Africans traveling to Libya, or West Africans already living in Libya, East Africans from Eritrea, Somalia, the Horn of Africa, who have always used this channel to travel to Italy mostly. But in recent months, I'd say for the past year, let's say, the majority route has been from Turkey to Greece, but because of the EU-Turkey agreement, the numbers have gone down there, and they seem to have sort of gone up for the route to Italy. Now, that's nothing really to do with EU-Turkey agreement. As you probably know from the last few years, from this time onwards, when the weather improves, there's certainly more migrants leaving Africa heading for Europe. So really, we really are not connecting the two.
Should we expect more of such attempts in the coming months, or is there some kind of effort being taken up to minimize?
As the International Organization for Migration, I've always been on record as stating that really, really more needs to be done to ensure that no more lives are lost. The situation in Libya certainly needs to be resolved, because what's happening now is that these human smugglers can operate with impunity because there's no real security system there to ensure that these kind of vessels are launched off the Libyan coast. Secondly, I mean, this is always an obvious one to look at, ensuring that there are more legal channels for migration for, first of all, those migrants who want to migrate for better opportunities, but more so those who are escaping persecution, escaping all sorts of human rights abuses that you find in certain countries. So obviously, without these legal channels, people end up resorting to using this smuggling gangs that really have no consideration for their well-being. All they want is the money that they generate out of this.
Many Africans who make it to Europe are subsequently deported. Why do you think so many are still attempting to take this risky journey?
The fact that so many are still trying to make the journey, even though very few make their stay in Europe long-term, is just the desperation that people are trying to escape from, whether it's conflict, whether it's human rights abuses, or abject poverty that ensure that they think it's always going to be better on the other side. This could simply be solved by situations in their home countries improving, whether economically or socially. Ultimately, it's also up to the international community to work together to ensure that when you talk of development, we're not just talking of development at certain levels. you know, develop a few filter down to the people who really need it the most. And those are the young people who are seeking employment, who are seeking education opportunities. And they usually are the ones who end up migrating if they find no opportunities where they are.
Itai Viridi of IOM discussing the fate of Africans trying to make their way to Europe. We now join DW's Daniel Peltz, who is traveling with a German Navy ship on the Mediterranean Sea. The Navy combat support ships, the FGS Frankfurt am Main and FGS Ludwigs am Rhein, left their home ports on January 11th. Their mission is to stop human trafficking and save lives in the central Mediterranean Sea. Emma Wally spoke to Daniel about the details of their mission called Operation Sophia. Due to the fact that Daniel is right in the middle of the sea, the quality of the line is not good. But nevertheless, take a listen.
Well, I'm on board the Frankfurt am Main, which is one of the largest ships of the German Navy. It has more than 200 crew members. And it's actually a supply ship, so it's carrying water, foodstuffs, fuel. It has a whole medical team and so on. And it's one of the ships that is actually best placed to take migrants on board.
And what happens to those migrants once they get on board, apart from being given food? Where are they taken by the German Navy?
Well, the German Navy would first take them on board and would do a medical checkup, would give them some foodstuff, some fresh clothes so that they can relax a bit and feel comfortable, and would question them where they're actually coming from, who has put them on the boat, and so on. And then they will be transferred to a different warship, or they would be taken to a port, and then on land, the claims for asylum could be processed.
Is this a difficult mission for the German Navy?
Yes, it is. I mean, the Navy is, of course, trained for combat operations at sea. This is a very different mission. On one hand, it's all about surveillance and information gathering. The soldiers are also tasked to gather some information about the trafficking networks, who the traffickers are, where they operate, and so on. And on the other hand, it's very difficult for the soldiers emotionally. I talked to a soldier who was involved in a previous operation where they saved more than 700 migrants and worked for 36 hours in one go. And she said she's never going to forget the pictures that she saw. She said the people were so desperate. You could see in their eyes what they've been through, that they were looking so down. And she said it was very, very difficult to deal with that emotionally.
And the European Union plans to help Libya set up its own coast guard, which could stop migrants before they reach the open sea. What do the soldiers or the naval officers on board the boat you're on think about that?
Well, I had a chance to talk to the commander of the ship, and I put that question to him. And he told me that any move would be welcome to establish more government structures and more government control in Libya, because everybody here on board knows that the naval mission alone will not be sufficient to curb migration and to prevent further loss of life. So that besides the naval mission, it is extremely important to once improve living conditions on the African continent so that people are less desperate to get to Europe. And on the other hand, of course, to establish more government structures on the shore in Libya and elsewhere that can also control and curb migration.
Emma Wells was speaking to DW's Daniel Peltz, who is sailing with the German Navy in the Mediterranean Sea.
Get the stories that are shaping the continent here on Africa Link.
Xenophobic riots engulfed the capital of Zambia, Lusaka, leaving residents in panic. The violence left two people dead. So far, more than 250 people have been arrested. Riots and looting started after rumors circulated on social media that Rwandans were behind ritual killings in the city. Rwandans are the largest group of migrants in Zambia. More than 60 Rwandan-owned shops were looted during this week's riots. Now at least 2,000 police officers have been deployed in Lusaka to contain the violence. Our correspondent Kasim Thikombe reports.
This is Ngombe Township, a high-density area in the Zambian capital, on a busy Thursday afternoon. It is one of the areas affected by this week's riots. usually a vibrant, peaceful neighborhood and popular shopping area, its residents are now gripped with fear and are usually indoors by 5 p.m. Gift Mwanza is one of the many Rwandan shop owners in Ngombe.
The riots, it has affected us because we are not opening sometimes. Sometimes we open, then we close early. We close like 17. Sometimes we don't open the whole day. Yeah, we are scared, yes.
Sarah Maido is another shop owner from Rwanda. Her shop was looted on Tuesday. The police got to the scene quickly, but now she's afraid the attackers could return.
It has affected us a lot. Business, our business has gone down. We can't say we are fearing. When you open your shop, you are almost looking here and there. Maybe the people will come and take all the things away. So we are fearing Monday. They are just coming in a group. And if they attack you, there's nowhere you can run. They just come. Some are even lifting the fridges, whatever they are getting. Even opening the fridges, getting the relish, meal, everything.
Muleya Mweloa, spokesperson for Zambia's Human Rights Commission, has appealed to governments to deal with the underlying causes.
On the pretext of protesting against the foreign nationals, some criminals are actually looting goods and food stuff. You can see the amount of looting that is taking place. They are targeting at food stuff, which means that the underlying cause could be hunger, primarily hunger, that they are really looking for food. So we are concerned that we need to seriously address the human rights, primarily the economic and social rights of citizens. And we hope that the government, which has a primary responsibility to protect all human beings, including non-nationals, will take effective measures to ensure that everyone lives in safety and their rights and freedoms are protected.
More than 250 people have been arrested, all Zambians. But Charity Munganga Chanda, spokesperson for the Zambia Police Service, dismissed the idea that the rioters were targeting Rwandan nationals in the city.
The number of those that have been apprehended so far is 262. The people that have been apprehended will appear in court by Friday. We want to set it as an example to would-be looters because it is an offense to break into someone's shop to loot or to steal. So these people are going to appear in court. Zambia Police, we've also appealed for calm and all the members of the public to wait for us to investigate this case. Right now we have 11 suspects in custody, the 11 are connected to the recent killings. Right now we are still investigating the case.
This is the first time in Zambia's history where local citizens have turned on foreign nationals and will surely leave a negative impact on the country for years to come.
Kathy Sikombe in Lusaka.
Human rights.
In Kenya, Muslims are crying out against what they are calling targeted killings by the Kenyan police. It is not the first time Kenyan authorities are accused of human rights violations. A 2015 report by Human Rights Watch accused the government of Kenya of human rights violations, including extrajudicial killings and enforced disappearances during its counterterrorism operation in Eastleigh in Nairobi. The area is predominantly inhabited by ethnic Somalis. At least 10 top Muslim clerics thought to be radicalized have been gunned down by unknown men since 2012. From Kenya, Andrew Wasike reports.
On Thursday, Muslim religious teachers and spiritual leaders from various mosques in Kenya met in the Kenyan capital Nairobi to deliberate on increased disappearances and extrajudicial killings of Muslims. They claim that the police was not only responsible for this, but also blamed them for harassment, illegal arrests, and illegal detentions. Alhaji Yusuf, a Muslim cleric and chair to the forum, told the conference that, other than protecting people, the police were instead taking the law into their hands.
While these violations had significantly gone down last year, an emerging trend indicates a return of enforced disappearances and extrajudicial killings.
Yusuf explained that in the last 4 months, the Shura Council, a consultative body of various Muslim organizations in Kenya, recorded cases of several Muslims being picked from their streets and their workplaces by plain-clothed police before disappearing. 8 of them have so far been found murdered. Abdullahi Abdi, chairman of the Shura Council, told me that President Kenyatta is to blame for the current harassment of Muslims in Kenya.
If the rights of Kenyans are being infringed and he doesn't talk about it and it is known, then naturally from the top there's an abuse of the rights of the Muslim which is being done with all the impunity. So it's not, I don't blame the ordinary soldier who's doing these things.
In their meeting, Muslim leaders resolved to open a human rights center at Jamia Mosque, the largest mosque in Kenya. The center will have a toll-free number where Muslims can report cases of extrajudicial killings, enforced disappearances, and harassment by the police. Muslim clerics are now calling on international agencies such as the UN Rapporteur on Enforced Disappearances and Extrajudicial Killings to intervene. In the meantime, they will concentrate on preaching good Islamic morals, as Faisal Kasim, an imam and the youth representative of the Shura Council, put it.
You don't teach the youth the real Islam in your respective mosques, then there are some people who are tirelessly working head and day and night on the internet, uploading videos on YouTube. They are busy misrepresenting the Islam. The imam should take lead responsibility in ensuring that the youth are taught what the real Islam is before they get the other information, which is the misrepresentation of Islam.
In 2014, after a series of violent explosive attacks by Al-Shabaab militants, Kenya introduced Operation Usalama Watch in the Eastleigh area of Nairobi. It aimed at flushing out Muslims who were suspected to be colluding with terrorists. In a span of 1 week, over 5,000 police who were deployed to the area had arrested over 4,000 people, mostly Muslims. More than 1,000 ethnic Somalis were relocated to northern Kenya refugee camps for failing to produce Kenyan identity cards despite having lived in Kenya since birth.
Andrew Wasike reporting. Trafficking young boys into marriage? Does this sound unusual? Well, this is the latest trend in Ghana's coastal areas. Parents here literally sell their children to fishermen who then marry them off. Now, anti-human trafficking organizations in Ghana are raising the alarm over the number of young children being trafficked and forced to work on the lake under inhuman conditions. According to our reporter, Isaac Kalechi, over 10,000 children have fallen victim.
It's a busy day for fishermen on this coastal area of Oblojo, a fishing community in Ghana. Men are busy on their canoes, pulling their nets out of the sea. Many of them are young boys. Ni Kwe is 13 years old. He was also trafficked here by his master at the age of 10.
We're able to sail and sometimes fall into the sea. Those of us able to swim are usually saved, but those unable to swim perish. We are many and we harvest a lot of fish. We are paid between 700 and 1 million.
Ni Kwe is referring to an amount equivalent to between $25 and $50 a week. According to anti-child trafficking group Challenging Heights, a new trend is emerging where some of these young boys are forced to marry against their will. James Kofi Annan is the president of the group.
Those areas, those coastal areas, there are people in this, you know, these areas who are still selling their children for less than 50 Ghana cedis, you know. And these children go out there, the boys usually to go and work as child fishermen, and they virtually, invariably end up being married off.
Although I couldn't meet any of such boys currently married off, 13-year-old Ni Kwe confirms the practice to me.
Some of the boys we play with here, they are sometimes married off, and so many a time they are kept under a tree. Their masters pay them to get them to agree to the marriage.
It is a crime for parents to force their wards into child labor. These offenses infringe upon the rights of children, and offenders could face between 5 to 10 years imprisonment. Comfort Copson resides in this fishing community and says that based on the harrowing stories, parents are beginning to realize the need to halt from the practices.
Whenever they hear a sad news, the parents describe, those over here describe, because they see their children on television and so on and so forth. So when the NGOs came, invite the parents and spoke to the parents.
The NGO Challenging Heights has launched a project to arrest parents sending their children to be married off. Kofi Annan says the anti-human trafficking unit of the police service still has a lot to do.
A parent needs to be advised that if you are caught and arrested selling your child, you can go to jail for at least 5 years.
Ghana's Children, Women and Social Protection Ministry has already announced plans to collaborate with all stakeholders to clamp down on the practice. It is urging Ghanaians to report to the police parents who are still sending their children into modern-day slavery.
Isaac Kalechi in Accra.
Your say.
Up next, we hear what you, our listeners, have had to say this week. Jen Nyingi and Timmy Omolade bring us your voices.
Well, that's the way we kick off today's USA with that beautiful, beautiful song from Samba Mapangala. Let's now get straight to the point, and we start on a sad note after a ship with overcrowded immigrants, mainly from Africa, sank in the Mediterranean. 500 of them are believed to have drowned.
Lada Branham believes the cause of all this is bad leadership and corruption. They were just looking for a better life.
Tell me, but Sebastian Rapp doesn't agree, and he says if they are willing to risk their lives to cross the Mediterranean, then they should risk their own life fighting bad leadership in their own countries.
Sukasa Gal from Mombasa, Kenya, also got involved in conversation, saying the issue of boats capsizing in the sea has been causing deaths for a long time. She hopes those thinking about trying it soon will consider cancelling their plans and consider other options.
Another topic that got the attention of our listeners and those who use our social media platforms was the no-show in Juba from South Sudan's former rebel leader, Riek Machar. President Salva Kiir and Machar are blaming each other for the delayed arrival. Machar says President Kiir is violating the security arrangements necessary for his return to Juba.
Francis Womojo says, okay, two commanders-in-chief with their own armies. He feels that what has been brokered is not a peace agreement, but bloodshed in Juba.
Well, another comment is from Man Faulty, who believes Riek Machar and President Kiir should be sent to The Hague to give others a chance to mend what they've already destroyed.
Our regular contributor, Aliyu Mohammed from Nigeria, thinks the week's events have made it crystal clear that both leaders have no intentions of forming a national unity government because they don't even trust each other.
And finally, an investigative piece by our very own reporter Emma Burrows on how Nigerian girls are forced into prostitution in Russia also received lots and lots of reactions.
Okay, Richard Omolola says it's so unfortunate to see my Nigeria degenerate to this level. May the good Lord save us all.
And for Rosemary Rita, it's only Africans who can save Africa. Remember, these opinions don't reflect Deutsche Welle's position on the topic discussed, but those of our listeners.
Jen Nyingi and Temi Omolade with some of your voices. Remember, you too can have your opinion aired here on AfricaLink. All you need to do is send us your opinion for on any of the stories that we've reported. You can send a text message to +491609575910 or an email to feedback.africa@dw.com or a letter to AfricaLink, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany. And before we end up the show, here is a recap of our top stories. After hundreds drown, the International Organization for Migration says that if nothing is done, more people could lose their lives in the Mediterranean Sea. Kenyans are accusing the police of extrajudicial killings targeting Muslims. With that, we come to the end of today's program. Special thanks to my production team this week, Oli Tangen Jr., Eliane Gladucci, and our wonderful technician, Andrea Yost. I'm Jen Ayeko-Kumet, and from all of us, we wish you a lovely weekend.